Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
Now, a US trade court yesterday blocked Donald Trump from imposing sweeping global tariffs on imports. President Trump imposed a 10% tariff on almost every country and higher rates for Mexico, Canada and China linked to the fentanyl trade. There were also industry-specific tariffs applied, imposing an additional 25% rate on steel, aluminium and cars. Now, the three-judge panel has effectively blocked the first two, the blanket 10% and fentanyl-related tariffs, arguing that it wasn't legally valid to use the emergency powers that President Trump cited when he was implementing them. For the latest in all of this, we're joined by law professor at the University of Minnesota, Richard Painter, who also served as chief White House ethics lawyer in the George W. Bush administration. And Richard, you're welcome as always to the program. Can you tell us a little bit more about this case? Who brought it?
Well, these cases, most all of them are brought by companies that are disadvantaged by these tariffs, that have to pay the tariffs in order to import products from abroad. And the legal argument is essentially that the United States Constitution gives Congress the power to set tariffs. Tariffs were controversial at the time of the founding of our country and continue to be controversial. And it's Congress that has the power through statutes signed by the President of the United States into law to set tariffs, just as Congress sets the income tax levels. The President doesn't have the authority to do this unilaterally, except for in very specific situations where Congress is authorized in response to an emergency and various other situations. And the opinion of the court here is that President Trump is far exceeding his power to implement tariffs unilaterally without the consent of Congress.
Okay, because he issued these tariffs under executive orders. We know he's been issuing loads of different rulings under changes under executive orders, and the tariffs were one of them. And as you've alluded to there, Richard, he declared several national emergencies as a reason to implement the tariffs. And the court seems to be saying this isn't a national emergency, what you're pointing to.
Well, yes. I mean, and whatever national emergencies he's pointing to don't have anything to do with the tariffs. He is imposing the tariffs because he wants to start a trade war, not just with China and a few countries, but with the European Union and with other countries throughout the world. And that's a decision for Congress to make. A trade war could have catastrophic consequences for our financial markets and for our economy. And that's why the stock market's collapsing whenever he comes out with new tariff proposals, and then rising when the courts strike it down or he changes his mind. And this has been going on for 2 or 3 months. But the last time we got in a major trade war with the European Union, a broad-scale trade war, was 1930. With a Smoot-Hawley bill that passed Congress and signed into law by President Herbert Hoover. And all that did was create a depression, global depression, that lasted about a decade and also pushed some countries not just toward economic nationalism, but countries like Germany and Japan toward fascism and militarism. It's a very, very dangerous decision, yeah. And it needs to be made by Congress.
Okay, but we know that Trump is very fond of his tariffs, and indeed in yielding them or wielding them as threats, even though sometimes or often he pulls back and doesn't implement them as planned, or pulls back once they've been implemented for a short period of time. This ruling is giving the Trump administration 10 days to take the steps that they need to comply with the decision, but the White House has already said they're going to appeal. Do you think they'll be successful? Is there any legal basis for the White House to appeal, do you think?
Well, they're going to argue that there's an emergency and that these the tariffs are tailored to the emergency at hand. I don't think their argument is convincing, but ultimately this will be for the appellate courts and ultimately the Supreme Court in the United States to decide. But when you go back to the intent of the framers of our Constitution, it was that Congress set the tariffs.
But we see in this administration, Congress has effectively been put to one side, hasn't it?
Well, yes. And the president's party, the Republicans, control both houses of Congress. But once again, I think a lot of the Republicans in Congress are petrified of these tariffs. The last time the Republican Party supported tariffs, at this broad a scale that a trade war, yes, was 1930. They triggered a depression, and they were thrown out of office, thrown out of the White House for 24 years.
Okay. So can I ask you then about what's likely to happen next? Because obviously, from our perspective, we're all watching on with interest here in the EU as to what this might mean for President Trump's threats of 50% tariffs on the EU and whether or not that no longer has the weight that perhaps it did a couple of weeks ago. If the White House is appealing, and they are, and this perhaps goes all the way to the Supreme Court, I don't know what sort of timeline we're working on. And does that mean in the meantime, practically, President Trump can't impose tariffs on the EU until the Supreme Court rules?
Well, he could try on a temporary basis, and we're going to have to see how that works out. But the grave danger is that EU countries respond with retaliatory tariffs, and that then those are difficult to unwind. And that's the problem with a trade war. Once it gets started, the other countries start to retaliate. Mm-hmm. And then everybody's legal system is different. And it's very hard to stop. And that's what happened in the early 1930s. And that's what we do not want happening. Again, it destroys the financial markets and can create a very long recession, if not a depression, and also lead to political instability.
So you think President Trump might try, regardless of this ruling, to go ahead and impose the tariffs while he's waiting for the appeal to go through? Do we have any idea how long those appeals might take?
That's up to the higher courts. The Supreme Court of the United States, when it wants to rule on something quickly, they do. And they can take a case quickly, or they can slow walk it. I hope that the United States Courts of Appeals and the Supreme Court realize that this is critically important to resolve this for our financial markets, which are very worried about it, and they're very volatile financial markets. They've been jumping all over the place because of the tariffs and the prospect of a trade war. So hopefully the courts will understand this needs to get sorted out sooner rather than later. What the president can do on his own, pursuant to the statutes that have been passed by Congress, giving limited emergency powers to the president to set tariffs, and where the president needs to go back to Congress to pass a law.
All right. Very interesting. And thank you for joining us with your analysis. That's Richard Painter there from the University of Minnesota.
We're going to stick with this now in the U.S. trade court ruling, which is blocking the Trump tariffs. Where does that leave Ireland and EU trade with the U.S.? Where does it leave the EU-U.S. negotiations that are ongoing? Where does it leave the EU counter tariffs that were due to come into effect in July, I think? I'm joined now by Minister Peter Burke, Minister for Enterprise, Tourism and Employment. Minister, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you for having me on, Cormac.
You were listening to Richard Painter there. Can I get your response and your reaction to the trade court ruling, which is blocking the Trump tariffs for now anyway?
Well, one thing that it does is the uncertainty does continue, unfortunately, and that's very difficult for businesses to respond to. And equally, the EU trying to negotiate through Miroslav Šeškovič, it is a big challenge. And one of the greatest challenges is that obviously we've had a very significant call with the Trump administration and President Trump and President von der Leyen on the 25th of May. But we really need President von der Leyen in the Oval Office to really progress and push the negotiations, which are so important to try and get a more integrated trading relationship with the US, which is one of the most important on the globe. And that has proven to be a very significant challenge.
Are the negotiations, though, are they not effectively paused now or moot until we hear from the US Supreme Court?
No, negotiations are still progressing. There are a number of option papers which are on the table, but the pace of the negotiations, Cormac, has been very slow. Obviously, the US has a lot of frustrations that they would see in relation to non-regulatory barriers they would claim in relation to the EU. We are trying to respond through Miroslav Šeškovič in relation to that, and equally trying to get an area that we could hive off and get agreement on to start the process on train, but it has proven very difficult.
But in terms of negotiation seesaw and the power swing balance, let's say, this surely weakens the hand of the US negotiators.
Well, in the first instance, I think one of the critical things that impacts on the US is where the US economy is. Obviously, in terms of the constitutional framework that is in the US, it is a matter of permeating up through the various different courts. That's one thing. And obviously, the US has their own system to do that. But obviously, if you look wider in the economy in the US, you know, all the cards are not in their favor. They have the lowest CPI index in over 10 years. They're going to potentially have to increase their debt ceiling by as early as July or August to give them more capacity. And we see various different reports suggesting that in relation to some of the announcements could wipe about 5% off their GDP. And when you consider the scale of the US economy being the largest economic vehicle in the world, that is hugely significant. Okay. And you're going to see constrained supply, prices going up, and investment slowing down. And that's the crucial impact that uncertainty brings, is that business leaders just won't make investments as quick as they normally would.
Yeah, and uncertainty continues for now, as you say. Can I ask you about a related matter or matters? And that's the comments of the Thonaghy, your party leader in Fine Gael, Simon Harris, today in the Dáil, and the President's comments. And this is related to what we're discussing here in terms of trade. And I'll come to that in just a second. But your Thonaghy's comments, your leader's comments today, what Israel is doing is genocide, he said. Now, the Taoiseach said this yesterday in the Dáil as well. You've been reluctant as politicians and leaders to say this until now, pointing to the ICJ case. Why the change in position?
Well, first of all, I would argue that there isn't a reluctance. I think what we've seen on our screens, what we've seen independently verified by so many, has been murder, has been genocide inflicted upon very vulnerable people. But the critical thing a government has to do, it has to operate in the multilateral fora, and you have to prove your case in those entities to ensure that substantive implications and sanctions are brought upon Israel as a state for carrying out this activity. And obviously the ICJ is the mechanism to do that. So no matter what we say, it comes down to trying to move the dial in Europe and also trying to obviously intervene, which we have done in the South African case under the Genocide Convention, which has been critical.
And there could there will be an awful lot of support, I assume, for your comments and describing it as genocide. What if the ICJ rules it's not genocide, that it's a crime against humanity or war crimes, for example?
Well, obviously, we'd have to cross that bridge when we come to it.
Would you have to retract those comments then on genocide, do you think?
No, I think it's our view, it's our firm view that it is genocide. I think it's our firm view around the Irish people from what we've seen on our screens, what we've seen independently verified. And I would just really like to put on the record, Cormac, that, you know, no country has led in this area like Ireland has in terms of recognising the state of Palestine, intervening quickly in the South African case. Once South Africa filed their memorial, we immediately went and intervened in the case, also ensuring that we supported UNRWA. When Commissioner Verhaerle really pulled the rug from under UNRWA, we were the first to stand up and say we need more money because it is the competent mechanism to get aid into Gaza. Mm-hmm. And obviously our trajectory with the Occupied Territories Bill, which will be very important as well. We have moved the dial, and that is really well acknowledged by President Abbas and those who are really close to Palestine. They see the work that the Irish government has done as being a lighthouse internationally for the Palestine people.
Well, be that as it may, can I ask you, since you're the Minister for Enterprise, about the President's comments today, and he alludes to a propaganda campaign against Ireland. He said active in the US. Let me give you the quote. He said, when we're seeking to have meetings with people who are investing in Ireland, they're being contacted in advance with a suggestion saying, you must open by asking, why is Ireland so against the US position on Israel? Is he right? Have you come across that?
Well, first of all, I would say there's no one who has suffered more in terms of our party leader, Simon Harris, and Taoiseach in relation to advocating for the people of Palestine in what Israel has called him anti-Semitic, who has put huge slurs in relation to his reputation. And we have fought them off at every hand's turn. We know there isn't a shred of anti-Semitic behaviour in our response.
And we accept that for sure. And these are, of course, the quotation I put to you is in relation to what the President has said. Is he right, though? I mean, that would be quite serious if there's a concerted campaign against investors in the US looking at Ireland as a location.
Well, I haven't met that, and I'm just back from the United States just 2 weeks ago. And I have to say, from meeting many business leaders over there in the Midwest, in Chicago and Minneapolis, and indeed I spent a day in Washington at Select USA, met a number of politicians there, that has not been raised with me.
You haven't come across that. So where do you think the President is getting that information?
Well, I think I'd have to put to him any charges in relation to that. What I can say is that people understand that Ireland has stood firm with the state of Palestine many, many years, many decades. We saw in the 80s.
I know Ireland that, and you've put that on record, and I've given you space to. Given you space. But are you not concerned then if the President of Ireland is saying, when we are seeking to have meetings with people who are investing in Ireland, they are being contacted in advance with the suggestion saying, you must open by asking, why is Ireland so against the US position on Israel? He seems to know, or he seems to have information, that there is a campaign primed towards investors looking at Ireland. Surely that is a concern to you as Minister for Enterprise.
Well, first of all, you have on the line the Minister for Enterprise, who is responsible for trade promotion, who is responsible for investor security, who is responsible for investor screening. I have not come across that in my work, and I've dealt with many multinational companies in the state, have meetings with them every single week, have meetings
so you'll seek clarity from the President, I'm sure, then.
It's not about seeking clarity from the President. I'm not seeking clarity from anyone. I'm only articulating what my experience is doing the work that I've set about to do.
I understand, but if that is happening,
his own person.
If that, I accept your bona fides. Here's my difficulty here, and I'm sure the listener.
You need to put that premise to the President.
Here's my question. I totally accept what you're saying to me, but I totally accept the bona fides of the President as well. And I'm just saying, surely in the office that you hold, surely it's incumbent upon you to figure this out and question it a little bit more, no?
I can judge by the evidence of me interacting with so many multinational companies, interacting with US politicians. And as far as I can see, in terms of my engagement, they are very much aware of Ireland's long-held position in relation to the state of Palestine, in relation to the two-state solution, and how much we changed the dial. And if you look at when I was going out to the European Council with the former Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, trying to advocate, you know, getting the Israel-EU Association Agreement up to see the violations and sanctions that should be under that, we couldn't get very little countries to come with us. Now we are getting a critical mass. And that's why Ireland has been seen as a leader, as a lighthouse on this issue. And one thing I would say, Cormac, which is very disconcerting in our politics, when you see some from the opposition, and I, as a father of two young children, absolutely abhor the behaviour that is going on in the state of Palestine. When you see the opposition coming forward saying that Ireland is fueling genocide, is some way a cause of this, or in either is some way helping or assisting the state of Israel, and considering the comments you're after putting to me earlier, it really puts in light how cynical the opposition have become.
Well, the opposition are not here to defend themselves. They would point to, I'm sure, and they did this week and last, the central bank and their role in terms of the bonds and so on. But we'll leave that to another day. Minister Peter Burke, thank you very much indeed for joining us.